Welcome back, everybody. It's your time to ed up on the Ed Up Experience podcast, where we make education your business. Dr. Joe Sallustio here with you again and again. I got to tell you guys, we're in graduation season now. For many of you listening, you're going to graduations. You're seeing lots of students across the stage. It's a great reminder of passion and why we do what we do in higher education. But I'll tell you, if you attend enough graduations, if you've attended enough or you continue to attend, they can seem monotonous, right? It can seem monotonous. You do the same kind of hour-long graduation, shake, you know, student comes up in a line, shakes hand, and so on. Watch the students in the crowd. If you want to really know and have an experience at graduation, instead of looking at the stage, do some people watching in the crowd and watch the students who are waiting to go get across the stage. It's fascinating. In fact, I was watching a student. She must have been in the W's because they go by alphabetical order. So she's a W or a Z. So she's sitting there and she's bobbing her leg and she's nervous and her legs are going crazy and she's twisting and turning and she's looking at every student that walks by. And you just go, what is she thinking when she's sitting there waiting to go on stage and get in line? And then you watch each student when they come back to their chair and how fast, I was like, how long will it take them to open up the diploma and see what's in it? Sometimes students were opening it on their way to sit down. Sometimes students would wait, kind of forget about it for a second, then open it. And you just start to think about and remember that feeling. And that's what higher education is all about. So anyway, I share that story because I'm like, you know, I've been to so many graduations and I'm like, let me just pick out a couple of students and watch them and watch their reactions. That's what makes it fun. And then you see the families just screaming out in the background. That's what makes it all worth it. So good job to all of you, higher education administrators, faculty, staff, those of you shaking hands and graduating students. That's what it's all about. Speaking of somebody that is graduating, I don't know why I said that segue, but she's graduating to official as a regular co-host here on the Ed Up Experience podcast. In fact, when I sent her co-host mug, which you only get if you're a special co-host here at the Ed Up Experience, she asked me to address it to her as, if I can remember, because I don't speak Spanish, La Reina del Airhorn. Here she is, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Michelle Cantu-Wilson. What's going on, Michelle?
I'm so glad that it is the air horn and not the fog horn. I appreciate you, Joe.
It was actually, because I didn't have the air horn, so it was a...
That was so bad.
It's kind of like a rusty trumpet. I was trying to get away with that from your introduction, but it doesn't quite work as well, does it?
It doesn't work. It's not me, Joe. It's
kind of
not
flat. And you're and you know what? You're anything but. You are dynamic, amazing, and somebody who is changing higher education by the day. In fact, this is not your only media outlet. I listened to you on a different podcast as a guest. I caught you on this YouTube series that you do. You're all over the place. How do you keep it all together, Michelle?
I'm just having fun. You don't need to keep it all together when you're having fun. And I learned from the best. That's I learned from the best, and that is our guest today. That's who I learned a lot of this stuff from.
Talk about a segue. Michelle, in fact, I thought it might be appropriate if you take over the introduction of our guest today. How you feel about that?
I feel good about it. Thank you. So everyone, I'd like you to welcome someone who's very special in higher education, someone who can put the numbers behind his actions as the vice president of enrollment at the University of Houston downtown, by far my favorite U of H campus, hands down. If you've ever been there, you know why. So I'd like to introduce my friend, my mentor, and a dear higher ed colleague, Dr. Daniel Villanueva, Junior, right, Daniel, we got the junior?
Yeah. The junior, that's correct. And there's an interesting story as to why I insist on the junior. You want to hear it? I mean, I don't know that. Sure. So when I first started in higher ed, you know, professional titles mean a lot to a lot of people. And I worked at Blinn College. That was one of my first real-time jobs in higher education. And my dad worked at Blinn College, but he worked as a custodial staff member in the building at which I became the director of student affairs in. And so there was Daniel Villanueva before Daniel Villanueva Jr. And so I became known as Daniel Villanueva Jr. because my dad was in the profession. He wasn't a faculty member or anything. He was a custodial staff member. And hence I keep Daniel Villanueva Jr. as my professional title, because I remember where I came from. My dad working at the same place as a custodian, and now me being a vice president. So if you didn't know that about me, Michelle, now you do.
How do you like that? Good story.
I did not know that story. I know a lot of them. Some of them we can't mention here, but I did not know that one, and I love it.
I was going to say, that's great, because you two know each other very well. So the fact that we can squeak something out that you don't know about each other on this podcast makes it all worth it. Michelle, you brought Daniel to us and said, you know what, you guys got to interview this guy. Besides the fact that he's absolutely crazy, this is the way she said it to me, Daniel. She said, Daniel's absolutely insanely crazy, but he's a master at his craft. Michelle, why did you want us to bring Daniel on here? And then, Daniel, how did she convince you? Did she strong arm you, and or did she just promise you things that we can't deliver on? I mean, tell me how the story goes.
The reason that I brought him on is not because of our, you know, relationship outside of higher ed and having a podcast and stuff. It's, I've watched him on LinkedIn over the past several years, which is where all the greats meet, in case you don't know that.
I did know that.
And I've watched his work in enrollment management. And while you're watching his work, you know that there's going to be a number at the end. And consistently, every year, he's able to increase enrollment by being a dynamic leader, by empowering his team, by having a work ethic that is, I've never seen surpassed by anyone who is dedicated to enrollment management. So it's fun to watch him, because Daniel taught me that the registrar is the only position that's really built into the university system. Right, Daniel? That's the one that you said is absolutely required.
It's required by Zach's accreditation, yeah.
Yeah. And so for him to have that title in that, you know, department under him, he takes it very seriously, and it shows. And he has a lot of fun and inserts his own personality and style to it. But it comes down to the numbers. And we know how important enrollment is. And Daniel is consistent at making sure that he hits those numbers every year.
Amazing.
Daniel, how did she convince you to come on over here and be subject to all this abuse? Because she said, I want to just ask him a ton of questions he doesn't know how to answer. That's how she said it to me.
Well, she's wrong. I'm going to answer every single one of them. It's going to be knocked out of the park. Now, whether the people listening agree or not, that's a different story.
Right.
No, a quick text from Michelle that said, hey, I think you'd be awesome on this. And I owe Michelle a lot. And so if she thinks it's worthwhile, then it's worthwhile to me.
So let's talk about enrollment management again at University of Houston downtown. You know, Houston, big city, urban enrollment, demographic. How are things going? Give us the once over. You know, what does the University of Houston downtown do? What kind of education programs and so on? And then tell us, you know, just in general, how you feel enrollment management is going there.
Yeah, so we're a striving university that's growing day by day. I've been here now going on 5 years. I can't believe, Michelle, it's been 5 years since I came out to UHD. And I came for what was going to be a year project with Student Information System, and have not left yet. And the reason I haven't left is because of the tremendous amount of work that we've been able to accomplish with all of the constituents, our faculty, staff, and students here at UHD. Over the course of the last 5 years, we've grown tremendously from around 12,000 students to about 15,000 students now in 5 years. And we are looking at continuing that growth here at UHD. We primarily serve those students who come from a community college. So upwards of 70% of our students transfer from a local community college, and me serving as a dean at two community colleges prior brings some unique experience into the mix. And my passion and heart lie with the community college, and this arena really allows me an opportunity to work with those exact same students, just helping them to get their bachelor's degree after they've completed their time at the community college. We are part of the University of Houston system. We are the second oldest institution and second largest institution within the University of Houston system campuses. And so we take great pride in being the most diverse campus in the city of Houston, largely enrolling students who are historically excluded, socioeconomically challenged, and are very diverse. In age, both straight out of high school all the way to non-traditional students. And as you open the podcast today talking about commencement, That's really the time at where UHD shines. We're getting ready for our commencement next week, and you will see students who are 16 years old graduating with a bachelor's degree, all the way to people who are 60 who come back and take them 30 years to get this degree. We pride ourselves on reflecting the diversity of the city, not just with age, but also ethnicity and stories. We hope we're transforming the city of Houston and hopefully having an impact on the state of Texas.
All right, so the first burning question I have,
sure,
Daniel, this is a really complicated one, and I hope you're ready for it. I've thought a lot about it. In fact, I wrote it down, and it's like a notebook long question. And it goes, how have you increased enrollment? Right? That's,
well, it's a really hard question.
I could write paragraphs about the hows, but really it is, how do you do it? Because that's what everybody wants to know right now. How do you do it?
So there's a demographic shift in not only in the state of Texas, but in the United States, right? Which really is making more higher education institutions compete for fewer students. And I think one of the unique things, advantages that I've had in this work is that I've worked at a community college and bring a perspective that comes from a community college. In addition, I've had the opportunity to be a transfer student myself. I attended Blinn, transferred. I went to a state institution. I went to a private elite institution for a master's degree. Then I went to a research one. So I have a varying background that allows me to see different processes and procedures from the community college all the way to private elite to research one institution, all within the state of Texas. And I will share with you that there's not one answer to say how you grow enrollment. But I will say that it's really about the people you work with that transform institutions. And that goes to play with faculty, staff, and the administration. I've never been a part of an institution where the administration is interested in growth, development of students, not only from a perspective of seats and butts and money, but also from social justice and transforming this population that I just spoke of. And how do we get more students in it? In education as a right of social justice. If we can get more students who are underprivileged, undereducated, historically excluded into UHD and not look at the numbers alone of seats and butts, but transforming them to get a bachelor's degree and then adding value that's a public good to society, we see that as transformative work. So when you have a president that sees it that way, you have provosts, and most importantly, you have faculty who see it that way, you're really able to move an institution forward. Our faculty at UHD are second to none. I tell you, I go to Faculty Senate, this is the best faculty I've ever had the privilege of working with, period. But in and of that, you have to have innovation, creation, technology, accountability, and data. Those are the 5 points, right? To moving an institution, to looking at enrollment. And if you don't have those, it provides a real struggle. Students today.
Those 5 again, Daniel, like make the point, because you whipped them, you know them by heart, but the rest of us were like, what's that secret again?
Sure. Well, you have to have innovation, right? We're in a modern age society where post-pandemic, and UHD was operating as post-pandemic prior to the pandemic, meaning we were having Zoom information sessions. We were online long before the pandemic struck. So innovation, and not only in terms of technology, but your business processes, how you look at things as an institution, what programs you're creating, how relevant are they to careers and industry, right? Technology, you cannot move this forward with the same old technology. If you have forms that have to be completed in person and there's paper signature required, you're operating your institution as at the peak of the year of 1997. We are in 2021. If you can file your taxes through text message and get a refund check that you never even see a paper form today, why too can't students do that process, right? So innovation, technology, you have to have creation. You have to have people who are creative to think differently about your processes and procedures, from course scheduling to recruitment to digital technology, social media. I'll share with you, social media is a huge thing. We just launched TikTok at UHD. If you follow us, it's UHD Social Gator, in December. And our goal was by the end of May to hit 200,000 views. Last night we hit 500,000 views. So we're really excited. We have our 500,000 t-shirts. We're having a cake tomorrow, right? But we're showcasing these stories of our students on campus, and they're leveraging their experiences to tell the story to others. You have to have accountability. You have to hold accountable to what your goal and vision is, and make sure that people understand it and that you hold them accountable. And holding accountable sometimes means helping people out of the institution, right? The people who have been here for a long, long time, we can't, we've tried, we've never, that's impossible. sometimes that means helping them strive for excellence at a different institution. It also means having challenging and difficult conversations with your processes and procedures, looking at them and saying, just because we can, should we, right? Should we do articulate this transcript this way or that way, and really moving the institution forward. I think another one is really the data piece. Going back to Michelle's opening line, I am data driven. There's not a conversation I can have with anybody about feelings and emotions that aren't based in data, right? I tell my staff, don't come to me and talk to me about I feel, I was thinking, right? Those are lines that don't resonate with Daniel. Here's the data, let's discuss it. Just as I was talking about TikTok, we were watching that 500,000, even on a social media number, right? We have it quantified down to a number in how we impact these students. So I think having infrastructure where everything is quantifiable is really what has advanced UHD in terms of enrollment. I can tell you how often students are logging in, what they're looking at, what they're clicking at. This is really big data. So we can go back and tell students, hey, you left this class in your cart. Did you mean to add it back? I mean, this is some really innovative things that are happening out in industry that we're leveraging here at UHD.
Michelle, I got your text that I'm to be quiet for the rest of the episode. So go ahead.
I did not say that. But did I lie? Isn't he amazing? Like, this is one of the things that I like to see when we're talking to someone is, what can I learn from them? And now you know, like, this is really stuff that every institution needs to be thinking about and talking about. And one of the things that I wanted to hone in on that Daniel didn't mention is his identity as a first generation student. Because I think two of his biggest strengths, aside from his, you know, data brain, are his status as a first generation practitioner, someone who never forgets what that feeling is like and who can always identify with students and their families and the community, but also that he has that community college background. Because I just think that that is more important for our industry and our particular area where we are in Texas. I think that's a huge strength because we know that over 50% of our students are in community colleges. So you're gonna see them no matter what. Daniel has the ability, he might have that big data brain, right? But he has the ability to really connect with students. And I think it's because of those two strengths that he has, first gen and community college.
What do you think about that, Daniel?
Well, thanks, Michelle, for the compliment. I will tell you, being a first generation student plays a role into my identity in the work that I do, but also being a poor first generation college student plays into the role of my identity. And one of the things that I tell students all the time is, you know, being first gen and being poor growing up really leaves you for the rest of your life to continue to have a framework of needing to overachieve and of being afraid of being deficit, right? For me, coming from a poor first gen family, navigating to where I am today, I still struggle with being a first gen professional because as a first gen professional, I worked all weekend. Even on Mother's Day, right? And we're parents who are working 8 to 5 in retail are done at 5, and I'm off on the weekends, but Omiho, why are you working? And so that whole conversation to educate my parents about being a first generation professional, most people think that it ends when you graduate college. It doesn't, right? You're now a first generation professional that's having to navigate so much of this work post higher ed in an environment which is unfamiliar to you. So I think for me, I always place the student's interest at heart and ahead of everything. And I think Michelle is right. My background as being first gen poor resonates with, in particular, with this population, and I'm able to connect directly with these students.
Can I jump in, Michelle, because I know you want to ask another question, but I want to say, I'm sure, because I have a pretty good memory on all the people that I interview, that is the first time anybody has talked about first gen workforce beyond first gen student. And you think about what that means to what we do as administrators and how we have to think about if we're serving first generation students, that serving those students has to go beyond the classroom. We're really preparing them for the rest of their life. And so if you think in that way, Daniel, that you said, it's even more, don't know, pressure, good pressure, I guess, on administrators. So I hadn't heard anybody put it that way before. Like, it just doesn't end when your degree ends. These first generation students become first generation professionals, and you're experiencing things for the first time every time, right? I mean, boom, mind blowing.
Yeah, I mean, I got an opportunity to congratulate our graduates the other day, and right after me was a segue into alumni giving. And I set the lady up. I said, I'm going to have to prep them for you because they don't know what the word alumni is and they don't know what giving is because they ain't got. And so I walked on stage and I educated the students about being an alumni to Texas Tech and to TCU and to Texas A&M and giving back and what that meant and what that looked like. And as soon as I stepped off stage, I told the lady that was coming in after me with alumni affairs that in particular, our student population, you have to educate for the rest of their lives. And as much as they grow and as much as they make, this is still a first for them, right? And she said to me, I've never seen someone set this up for me to come and give this presentation. And it, the feedback that she got in terms of people actually donating was a lot better. But that's really understanding the population you serve, right? If you know who they are, you're more likely to resonate with them. And I think that that's been a benefit for UHD.
Hey, everybody, head over to www.edupexperience.com, our website, where you're going to find all of the episodes that we've recorded categorized so that you can ensure that you're spending your time listening to the podcasts that are most important to you. You're going to see the reviews of our podcasts, the shows in our network, our partners, and a section on starter episodes. If you're new to the EdUp Experience, listen to those starter episodes and get a feel for how the podcast has evolved over time and our impact in the world. www.edupexperience.com. Well, you know what time it is, Michelle, here at the EdUp Experience. It's time, ladies and gentlemen, for Higher Ed Word Association. Here's your contestants, Daniel Villanueva and Michelle Wilson. We are going to give you, Daniel, a couple of words or phrases, and we want to know the first set of ideas, thoughts, musings that come to your mind. And we're going to let Michelle go first to give you an idea of how this works, and then you get to go first the rest of the time. You ready, Michelle?
Sure.
Okay, your first word is advising.
Not enough. There's not enough. I mean that like in terms of numbers, in terms of advising time, in terms of a commitment to it. We know that most colleges have a ratio of advisor to student that is just embarrassingly high. It's just too high. So that has to be fixed. And there have been some leaders who have done great work around that area. And then we know that 5 minutes per student is just not enough time. And if you're talking about students like Daniel and I were, I don't know if you were, Joe, but being first gen, you can watch our show, Latinx Learners, on our conversation about what's the bursar, right? Like, what are you talking about? You have to give me a vocabulary lesson before you can even give me a lesson on how to do things. So I think students need more creative, more innovative, and just more advising than we're offering.
Before you go, Daniel, I would like to note that if you could define, if you work in higher education, you can tell me what a bursar is. You'll be the first person to do so because nobody knows what a bursar is. Every bursar does different things across the entirety of higher education. Daniel, your word, advising.
So there is one thing about the bursar's office that is consistent amongst most institutions. Rich people who can pay their bill can go to the bursar's office to pay it. Most of us know what financial aid is in lieu of the bursar's office. So that's one thing. Advising. So I think advising is the hardest job on campus. And I say this all the time, and most people will disagree with me. But it is the forward-facing contractual obligation of the institution to students. When you think about the work that they do, they are conveying the curriculum to a student whereby they're saying, take these sequence of courses, and then at the conclusion of that, we will give you a degree. That's a contract, right? But in that process, the curriculum is changing every year. So these advisors have to keep up with something that is changing every single year. Faculty's redeveloping the curriculum. They're looking at what's required. Advising has to keep up with that. In addition, there are states' test requirements that are changing all the time. The sheer numbers of advisors ratio to students. In addition, the complexity and the weight of what we put on advisors in terms of what's required for those students who are first gen, who are low socioeconomic students, who also tier the line on counseling, career counseling, as well as psychological counseling. This is really hard work, and advisors in my purview are underappreciated and are really, as Michelle indicated, what could transform higher ed if we had more advisors. If you think about your time in higher ed, just in general, none of us got through without an academic advisor. We may have gotten through without going to the registrar's office. We may have gotten through without going to financial aid. We may have gotten through without going to faculty office hours, but no one gets through their degree program without seeing an academic advisor. And I think that that is really telling.
I love it. Okay, here we go, Daniel. You go first this time.
Sure.
Transfer credit.
Hot mess. Transfer credit is a hot mess because institutions believe that they're the only
cluster.
One. And most people are, most institutions are not globally looking at the impact that transfer credit has on the students. If we have a common numbering systems like other states did, it would be a lot easier, but Texas does not. So each institution can name whatever class they want, give it its own, you know, SIP code. I mean, that's technical terms. And students have to kind of toy between institutions to figure out how this goes. And then there are some state laws about if you do it here and you're core complete, then you can transfer it there. When in reality, higher ed should come together to say, this is what makes a bachelor's of English. These are the classes you have, regardless of where you come from, regardless of where you take these classes, this is where it should come. It's the number one thing in transfer student perspective that they want answered. We did a number of surveys and work, and a lot of data research went into what do transfer students want. The number one thing that they want to know is how their credits transfer. Why? Because they don't want to retake classes that they've already paid for. They want to ensure timely graduation, and they want to get a diploma. And so those things drive that question, and most institutions do a really poor job at it.
You know what's funny about what you said, and a lot of people don't recognize, and maybe your faculty or staff on this phone call, how much institutional choice there is in the transfer credit process. It's really easy to say that something doesn't fit. Maybe it's harder to say that it might fit, or could we make it fit? There's, you know, if it was a standardized process, it would make sense. But because it's open to, it's open to interpretation. Some people are really accepting of transfer credit, and others aren't. And maybe who you call that day, the person that you talk to, had a bad day, and they go, "Oh, these credits aren't gonna transfer here." And then you call back the next day, and you get somebody else that goes, "Oh, yes, it's like calling an airline. Sometimes you can get that $100 off your flight, and sometimes you get somebody that's not willing to call their manager to help you. It really is a subjective process. Michelle, over to you, transfer credit.
I just agree with them. I think it is a hot mess. And if I were at the top of the higher education coordinating board, my question would be, why? Answer me why. Why is it a hot mess? Why this system? Why no innovation? Why not the infrastructure? Going back to Daniel's 5 points, why can't we be innovative? Why can't we lead the way? Why is it so opaque for students, right? I second that hot mess.
And every single time we don't take a credit, that student pays more, right?
And delays graduation.
Exactly. So with you student-centric, can you make it work? I mean, anyway, I could get me going on that kind of stuff. All right, ready, Daniel? Financial aid packaging.
Well, I'm going to give the UHD perspective, innovative, but I don't know that that is uniquely outside of UHD. What I think has to be done is financial aid packaging traditionally is done in bulk. I don't know that most people know that, right? So in your student information system, you put in the series of numbers, you have your EFC, you have your, your expected family contribution, you have the amount that they've made, the hours that they've taken. It's a matrix, it auto packages and says, based on this, here's your package, right? And until someone asks for a manual review, it's automized. So what we do at UHD that's a little bit different is we do the the auto packaging first, and then manually review each student to leverage aid based on a series of outcomes. How successful are, how likely are they going to be successful to graduate? How many hours have they taken? What is their financial situation? We also have institutional aid that we can leverage for those students who may be on the fence of returning, re-registering. It's a very manual process that way, but that has helped us to grow enrollment tremendously. If you auto package, which is what the industry does, you leave it to chance that a student will select you. And what you're doing is you're saying, here's our best effort without manual review. What we do at the University of Houston Downtown is we do that first and foremost, and then repackage each student to the very best package that we can offer, a competitive package for these students to review their options and select UHD. Now, in terms of financial aid, there's been some real improvements with financial aid over the course of the last couple of years. You know, EFC is going away, which is new. But in addition to that, they've simplified FAFSA to the extent that they could. But they're looking at, simplifying it even more. They've now reduced the amount of number of students who are selected for verification, which traditionally has been Black and brown poor students. So that number has gone from 30% of the population down to 8%, which is really impacting UHD, but it's also impacting other students. And what verification really did is just ask students to prove how poor you are. You say you're poor, we need proof how poor you are, right? You say you have $0, prove it to us. You say you have five kids, I want to see all five birth certificates. And it really was disproportionate. So I think the good work has been done there. On the state level, we've seen the TASFA be reinvented, and for 2023-24, it'll be electronic. So those students who are dreamers are moving from paper. Again, it's to only 2022, right? And we're moving to paper. So I think financial aid has worked well, and it's getting better day by day. But I will tell you, most things that can help financial aid, the thing that could help financially the most is donors giving unrestricted funds to endowments that help students with emergency aid. Our students need aid for books, for gas, for life, for rent, for childcare. And the COVID funding that we were able to get under the Trump administration and the Biden administration really proved to help our students. And although it was directly related to COVID, outside of the pandemic, our students struggle with those same things.
Michelle, financial aid packaging.
I think it is becoming more innovative. Like Daniel said, the unrestricted funds related to endowments, we got one of those at my campus, you know, from Mackenzie Scott. And that is going to help us to transform our community by paying for the community college degrees of any of the graduating classes within our service district. So that's huge. I think it is evolving and changing. I also think that we're becoming more data-driven at the community college level and starting to do the things that Daniel is talking about, evaluating the individual student. Some of it, and Daniel knows this, some of it is just, sometimes leaders forget to ask those of us who were poor first-gen students what would help. So we are becoming a better collaborative higher ed community by having conversations about what we needed when we were in the shoes of our students. Sometimes you just have to turn to a colleague and say, how do you think this would help? Did you get financial aid? Yes, I did. We did it via mail back in the day, right, Daniel? Daniel's much younger than I am. I forgot. But
much young.
it certainly helps an institution when you have conversations as colleagues about your own student experiences so that you can reflect on what's needed change-wise, but also to humanize your students. When we're talking about things like Daniel mentioned, automation, you know, manual review, I know that sounds like a technical term, but it's also a loving term. It's also a time term. It's a commitment term. It's seeing the whole student. So I would like to see that innovation across Texas.
Boy, oh boy, I love this episode of Higher Ed Word Association with your winner today. Again, our guest wins, Dr. Daniel Villanueva. It's impossible for our guest co-host to win, so he wins, and there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Whew, we got by that one. You know what I love about this Higher Ed Word Association thing that I invented, and nobody else has ever done any word association event ever in the history of the world. So I give myself credit for inventing it. But what I like is that you would be amazed at how much you can say with just one word. you get a word and how much, especially, you know, when he talks about higher education, we have students, we have stakeholders, we have donors, we have administrators, we have faculty, we have staff, and you could take these words in any direction. And some of the insights that are coming out of this as I do this from episode to episode are pretty incredible, as they were today. And I'm dominating the time, so I'm going to give this the last piece of the episode to Michelle.
So I was laughing.
The harassment of text messages is overwhelming at this point.
Daniel and I did word association back when we first started our show, which we hope you will tune into. It's called Latinx Learners. We were the ahead of the game.
A little bit here, guys. Take your minute. Latinx Learners. Where do you see it? Where do we get it?
We're everywhere, but we're mainly on we're on YouTube. I have us on Spotify now. But the main thing, the thing that you made me think of, Joe, was when Daniel and I did word association. I don't know where we were, but Daniel and I stole a room somewhere, and we tried word association. And I said, "Do you salsa?" I guess that was the question. He said, "I eat salsa." We haven't tried
salsa, but I eat salsa. Yeah.
We haven't tried it again, but yeah, Latinx Learners was actually the brainchild of Daniel. So Daniel, you share where the idea came from, because you're the one that asked me, and I feel very lucky to have been chosen to do this work with you. And I think it's very important work related to first generation students, faculty, staff, and administrators in higher ed.
Yeah, well, it goes back to the conversation about being first gen and first gen professionals, really looking at Michelle and I, who come from two backgrounds, both have gone to the community college, one working at the community college, one working at a university in the fourth largest city in America, and providing a space and an outlet for faculty, staff, and students who look like us and feel like us to hear about different topics and our perspective on it. It really has been an overwhelming response from people who write me even long after an episode is done and just discover it. And it's like, hey, I just watched this episode. I'm like, oh my God, that's been a year and a half. So I really enjoy doing it. The pandemic, you know, put a pause on how often we can record, but we do have a couple of new episodes. And so we're excited about the work. Michelle?
It's been interesting. You know, we went from doing the show on our own, just Daniel and I in person, to doing it via Zoom with guests. And I texted him, what was it, Saturday, Daniel? And I was like, I'm ready to be a talk show. It's time. We need to sit down, because I had a conversation with Dr. Armando Orduña, who is the director for Latinos for Education here in Houston. Yeah. And I was talking to Dr. Eddie Ruiz, who is a colleague of mine. And we were talking about being first-gen parents and how we are parenting our children. And the conversation was so robust and so productive. I thought, you know, we got to get this out. This has to be, we're going full Oprah style. We got to get the chairs. We need the studio. We got to do the whole nine yards, because there are so many of us who need to feel that sense of community, but we're also looking at the challenges of cultures of the first generation experience combined with intersectionality of our culture as Latinos, the higher ed culture, the subcultures that we experience. There are so many clashing things that when we have these conversations that Daniel and I have been having, some with guests and some just between the two of us, we bring clarity to what can feel very unsteady and very confusing.
Mm. And Michelle wants to be Oprah, but I want to be Jerry Springer, right? I want a Jerry Springer.
We are not bringing Jerry Springer. And I was going to be the Mexican Barbara Walters. Remember, that was the goal.
I don't know Barbara Walters. We got to bring somebody that's got a little bit more pizzazz. Yeah, who's got more pizzazz than Barbara?
Christina,
that's right. But no, we hope y'all will tune in. But this episode really, truly, for me, is about Daniel's work in enrollment management. And I hope folks are listening and thinking about, you know, bringing their A game and leveling up, because we know how higher ed is changing in terms of not just how many students are enrolling, but how they are enrolling. And that might be an episode for another day.
Love it. Well, I'll tell you guys what we've got. Daniel, we got two final questions. By the way, I'll have to see if Elvin and I can recruit you guys to become part of the EdUp Experience Network, along with our 19 other shows, but we'll talk about that off air sometime. We have two final questions for every guest, Daniel, that we ask. Number one, what did we miss about University of Houston downtown? Anything you want to say, anything going on, final thoughts, plug away, website, whatever you want to say. And secondarily to that, what do you see as the future of higher education?
Yeah, so UHD is a growing institution, and we are led by a brand new president who's been here a little over a year, and he is transforming the way UHD moves forward. Dr. Lauren J. Blanchard is our president, and we have a slate of new vice presidents that have been selected and are coming in. In addition, we have a new strategic plan that we're rolling out. In addition, we have our first fundraising event next week. We are tired, but I tell you, there's a lot of really good work on the horizon for UHD, and we are moving from a commuter campus to a regional comprehensive university that will offer more and more graduate degree programs, increase our graduation rates of not only transfer students, but freshmen. In addition, fundraise to be able to help our particular students get through graduation, and really look at elevating our faculty and staff ratio to students, by which we can continue to impact more students at a greater rate. We're building new buildings. We've got a new rec center coming up. We have a new science and technology center that's just been built. So UHD used to be in one building, and most people haven't been to UHD in a long, long time. We're up to 9 buildings now and 15,000 plus students, and we are on the move. So there are some exciting times ahead for UHD, and you can visit us at uhd.edu. And where do I see higher ed going? You know, I think higher ed is at a really pivotal point by which many institutions will find themselves closed by the enrollment shortfall we're reading every day. I just read an article yesterday about Henderson State up in Arkansas, and they're having to reduce programs. And this is a real issue for higher education. It has moved from an academic enterprise to a business enterprise. And despite anyone who won't agree with me because they are an academician or in the academy, I respect that, but I wrote my entire dissertation revolving around how higher education has transformed into an academic capitalistic enterprise. Neoliberalism has just encroached upon the academy, and we are where we are, whether we agree or disagree. But higher ed has to secure funding. And right now the models that have set up funding are headcount and student credit hour. And we don't agree with that as educators, but it's the framework by which we have to operate. Therefore, it puts a strong importance on increasing enrollment for fiscal stability. We would advocate and hope that state legislators and federal government would fund higher education at a greater amount, but the reality is they're not. And so we have to do the due diligence to not only fund ourselves, but more importantly, reach more students to have a greater impact to hopefully graduate and stabilize and energize our economy. That's where I see the future of higher education. And I think faculty, staff, and students will have to think entrepreneurial in their work and really think about redefining our purpose in terms of funding so that we can then provide a safeguard for faculty to do their research, to get raises, to increase faculty, as well as staff ratios, and then transform students' lives so that they can go and impact the economy.
Yeah, a big takeaway there, I think, from what you said, Daniel, is that higher ed is transformed, and really, I think, transformed from an academic enterprise to a business enterprise. Well said. I think it's interesting. The more and more that time goes by and more people are realizing that, when you talk about the business terms like diversifying revenue and revenue itself and expense and those things, kind of the fiscal language comes into higher ed, it opens up some eyes on that you really have profit and loss. It is a business. And if you don't manage it appropriately, you won't have one. And if you don't have one, then you have no way to help students. So you better focus on that business piece. Again and again, you may know her, ladies and gentlemen, of the Director of Teaching and Learning Initiatives and Special Projects at San Jacinto College. I know her as Lorena Del Airhorn. I know I'm not saying that with the right accent, but nonetheless. Dr. Michelle Cantu-Wilson. Michelle, thanks for bringing Daniel us, and thanks for co-hosting with me again.
Thank you, Joe. It has been a distinct pleasure to host someone that I look up to so very much, and someone I know raises the bar every day in his line of work.
He is the Vice President of Enrollment Management at the University of Houston Downtown. He's Dr. Daniel Villanueva. I got to get it right. Daniel, how was your EdUp experience today?
It was absolutely wonderful. It's great to talk with intelligent colleagues, and it was a pause in my day of a lot of long emails and hard work that I have to do. So I really enjoyed taking the opportunity to think about higher education, the direction of it, and where we're going.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, you've just ed-upped.